Hello, Taurus, and welcome to Good as Gold, your 2014 mid-year reading focusing on the creative process as mingled with the use of creativity in earning one's livelihood, and then additionally, how that all relates to the question of how you feel about yourself, this thing known as self-esteem or self-respect. I have a theory that they're all closely related. That's the basic approach that I'm taking in this reading, and it's the culmination of much thought about how one goes from an idea to something of substance and then turns around and makes a third transition or a second transition and has that actually become something of value in the world that is supportive of, at the very least, what one is doing and maybe even much beyond. That is to say, how do you fully support yourself on your creative endeavors? And that's not always what happens. It's a kind of a goal I'm setting for this. But one thing that happens with many creative people is that they do need to figure out a way to earn more concentrated amounts of money, or at least have a dependable flow of income, a money gig, as it were. And this is actually indicated in your chart. The idea that it would be helpful to have a money gig, at the same time it would be helpful to be working toward having your creative gifts be something that is accessible as monetary value. It's such a strange thing to have to do this. I mean, part of why we have to do it is because we live in a society that has missiles that cost $2 million that are shot off like July 4th fireworks, and then a big deal is made out of giving a grant to an artist or a musician or a writer. And I think that it is worth, you know, without despairing too much, recognizing the crisis of values that leads to that, and the idea that we who strive to do something creative and loving and peaceful are doing so essentially in the midst of a world war and in the midst of a society that, for the most part, thrives on violence, and where most of the resources go toward the making of war and the implements of war. It's really quite crazy, and it's enough to drive anyone crazy. I mean, when you think of what you could do with a $2 million endowment, how many artists you could provide scholarships for over how many years if that money is invested well, and then this is just used as missiles. It makes you wonder, you know, one missile, really. It makes you wonder what on earth is wrong, and yet at the same time, as a society, we do, I'm hesitating on using the word pretend, value beauty and art and, you know, the opera and art museums, and everyone loves a good book and everyone loves great music. And there is this split in the value system of our culture that needs to be addressed. Now, fortunately for you, and I've been puzzling over this for a while, now I'm seeing a possible resolve on this. Your sign is on the fixed cross if you are Taurus or Taurus rising, and the energy of fixed is a very specific type of energy. It is hold on, getting my mic stand adjusted here. It is you can tell when you're dealing with fixed energy because it manifests as a kind of a persistence. God, it's hard to describe that. But it's so distinctive. Let's leave that as an X factor right now. But your sign is on the fixed cross, and your co-members of the fixed cross are Leo, which we're going to be focusing on a bit, and then Scorpio and Aquarius. But the next set of signs houses over is the mutable cross. And so when we look at where the solid and not so easily changeable quality of Taurus finds its value system, it finds its value system on the mutable cross in Gemini. It's almost the perfect contradiction, because Taurians strive, I think, in many ways for a kind of a consistency, and if they don't strive for it, they find that consistency in their lives. I've known and loved many Taurians, and there's something about them that the ones that I know that is very dependably the same. They're not typically the kind of people who they're one thing one year and then another thing another year, and they move and they jump regions of the country and they change their physical appearance frequently. There is more of a, you know, they're going to be there, you know where to find them, you know, you know who they are for the most part and what to expect when you meet up with them. And this is a surprising thing in this world of so much change, and yet it's one of the reasons we all need Taurus people in our lives. They become a kind of tradition for their non-Taurus friends. It's kind of like, it's nice to have the friendly neighborhood church, you know, back in the old day, right? That was the one of the pillars of the community, the post office, the butcher shop, the third or fourth generation butcher shop, the name a couple of things. This is who Taurus people become in the lives of their friends. And as a contributor to the culture, you can think of yourself as a kind of a living tradition. That's one of the roles that you perform. And when you think of the Taurian artists, and some of my favorite, certainly musical artists, the ones who've had the deepest impact on me and who I could listen to all day are Tauruses. In particular, I've mentioned before Brian Eno, probably my overall favorite artist on the planet, possible exception of David Lynch, and David Byrne, also a Taurus. And they have created enduring, I forget what sign Lynch is, but I know he's not a Taurus. He's a Capricorn. They have created enduring traditions, and Lynch gets this also as an Earth sign. But where, in a way, I mean, modern rock is kind of built on the foundation that was laid by Brian Eno. So one person added so much and changed so much that he has become a kind of a personal institution. And I'm sure his work will endure for many, many, many years. He'll probably be considered one of the classical artists of our time. And so this quality is something that you are able to work with as a creative person, whatever form that may take. The perfect contradiction to that is that the next sign out from yours, the second house, second solar house, or if you're Taurus rising, your second whole sign house is Gemini. Gemini changes. Gemini is the original different haircut every day. The original, you know, I do 20 things type of quality. And so it's almost as if you serve as a filter for the many different ideas and values that you have, and then present a very strong, unified, stable structure to the world. Now, the beauty of having Gemini on the second house is that you can work both sides of the values of our culture. You are adaptable to almost any value system that you want to adapt to. And additionally beautiful is that this is not merely acting. It's not merely a chameleon thing where you're pretending to have those values. There is actually something about everyone's language that you can speak. There's something about everyone's way of life that you consciously learn from and make many micro adaptations. It may not look like it on the outside. Clearly, you're a kind of traditionalist on the outside, but you're much more radical on the interior presentation and part of that interior kind of orientation, shall we say. And that part of that radicality is the ability to be anything that you need to be, learn from anyone that you need to learn from, adapt to any situation that you need to adapt to. So this is a real gift. And where Gemini is on the second house, you can think of it as of being two separate resource bases, two separate spiritual bank accounts to draw from, two separate but parallel value systems. And that makes it easier to have a money gig that you are sincerely invested in, that you really care about and love, as well as another expression of your life, another expression of your work and your creative process that does not need to be associated with the values associated with the money gig. And in fact, it would be suitable to even have a source of income that does not interfere. And that's very important. I mean, what you find with a lot of creative people who know they have to have a money gig is that the money gig totally overshadows their ability to do their more creative or alt other creative side in an adequate way. And one way to arrange that is to have a source of income and then not worry about money when it comes to your creative passions. And there really is something to be said for not having one's creative passions be part of the marketplace. In my own life, I prefer to keep my photography out of the marketplace. I prefer to not have to transact my photography as a commercial product. I do some of it, but I don't do it actively. I only have one client, and that's fine. And I don't have to do that much. And the benefit of that is that I don't have to associate my visual art with a sales process. Now, that is not going to work so well for someone who wants to be a photographer all the time. Then it's necessary to make an adaptation. And photography is especially tricky because places like Getty Images and forget the name of that thing that everybody posts their photos to, is not helping. It's making, and the proliferation of digital cameras is not helping. And so let's take the example of someone who wants to focus on photography. It is therefore necessary to work that division, that Gemini split, by having two approaches to photography. One is the money gig, and one is what you really want to be doing in addition to that. So, for example, I know a Taurus photographer who has found a way to make dependable income photographing the interiors of buildings for realtors. Now, the nice thing about that is that it's really fun to photograph the interiors of buildings, and you can be very creative doing that, and it's not soul-depleting work. You just take these pictures and make them beautiful, and then the more beautiful they are and the more successful they are, the more that works and the more that pays off, and plus, it keeps your camera in your hands. I know a Taurus musician, and the story he told me was that he was working as a bicycle messenger and also developing his career as a songwriter. and he was a very good bike messenger. That's what he said his problem was. That I can imagine he's a pretty intense guy. And one day he said, you know, this is ridiculous. I'm out here riding my bike all day. I have got to do something where I've got my guitar in my hands all day. And he switched to teaching music lessons. Now, when you switch to teaching music lessons and you then gain the benefit of having the guitar in your hands all day and you're immersed in music all day, there is the thing to watch for, which is the burnout factor on that, and making sure that, you know, you're not investing too much of your creative energy in the revenue generating side, or emotional energy as the case may be if you're teaching children, and that you leave enough creative energy left for yourself. I can imagine that teaching guitar lessons would be a pretty good way to use your guitar skills without burning out. So to sum up, there's two ideas here, but the main idea is the Gemini second house saying that that you use your resource two ways. And I would suggest that in terms of finding the money gig, that the money gig be as closely related to your true passion as possible, and then you slowly start to morph it over. You build the connections. Ultimately, the real integrity is that no matter what you do, it is you doing it, and then you make sure that you are always bringing the same level of quality and devotion to your work. And I would say the other thing is that make sure that you, when you assign something to the role of money gig, that it be income that is concentrated in a way unlike, for example, the minimum wage, where the making the money is really, really spread out and it's not easy to make very much at an hourly rate, but rather that it be some kind of per job thing where you can be more efficient, or that the, you know, and not have it take a lot of time, or that it be something where you are remunerated on the basis of your talent, even though you may know that you have more talent, you have more that you want to do, that there be something in the range of, say, $20 to $50 an hour that you do. And the thing is that if you're a creative person, part of what you have to use your creativity for is the creation of opportunities. Very necessary thing to do. Okay, let's take a look at Leo, where there is going to be a lot of concentrated energy for a while, and especially we're going to have Jupiter, the largest planet, in there till next summer. That is a beautiful thing. Now, I'm going to take a look at my theory of, you know, the use of the mutable cross by Taurus. You know, Taurus as this solid but definitely hot inside, solid energy that has a real flexible quality when it expresses itself through Gemini, right? That's a very necessary balance to have, that mix of very solid stability, but also the ability to change, which is a crucial resource provided to you by Gemini. Again, using the examples of both Burn and Eno, these are people who have, on one level, cut a very clear course, a very steady and stable course through the industries they've been involved in, but at the same time have consistently reinvented themselves over and over again, and often morphing, in the case of both of these guys, between visual art and music. And I think that that's yet another expression of Gemini, where there is that ability to draw from two totally different artistic wells and to have these things support and feed one another. I mean, Byrne would paint some of his own album covers. Eno did a thing called, I think it was called 30 Million Paintings, where he developed a computer program that was designed to turn the normally, you know, static, ugly computer box on the table into an artwork and compose music. And the program runs a script where it morphs it morphs a series of, I think, 600 paintings that, or 300 paintings that he did into kind of an infinite number of possibilities. But the idea here is mixing and matching. And so if you're a writer and an actor, that's pretty easy to blend that. If you're a photographer and a musician, look for ways to blend that. And I would also say that it would be worth always exploring some new art form, some new expressive form to feed your primary form and to give yourself room to expand. Now, that all said, let's go to the next fixed sign, which happens to be Leo, which happens to be on your cross and happens to be the location of Jupiter. And I consider Leo in many respects to be the seat of creativity. And I didn't really understand why I had that view and or why it was supported. But then I reread the Leo chapter in Esoteric Astrology, which I read in the late 1990s the most thoroughly. And Bailey is talking about the materializing in... Oh, no, this is Crowley talking about this. Okay, no wonder I missed this. Crowley is talking about how Leo has a materializing power to it, that it has the ability to make substance, seemingly out of nothing or space or pure energy. And one of the reasons why Taurus is so obsessed with its home and needs a beautiful home and to be constantly cultivating beauty in one's home is about the presence of Leo on the fourth house. And the fourth house is the illustration of one's home, and Leo is about this materializing quality, and there's creative quality involved, and Taurus always digs beauty. There's not a Taurus alive who in some way doesn't live for beauty as the, you know, one of the main reasons they are happy to be on the planet. It's a Venus thing, and it's a human thing, and it's a goddess thing, and it's a lot of other kinds of things. But when we put that on the fourth house, it comes up in one's value in one's home, one's creative roots being in one's home, and in addition, those two things, creative roots and the value of beauty in one's home. And so this is to say that your home environment would be very well suited as your creative environment. I know that it's nice to get out, not everyone's place is that big and all that, but your home needs to be your creative center. And in a sense, your home needs to be your primary creative project. I know that not everyone thinks of their home as an art project, but that would be a healthy thing for you to do, because there is so much creativity that you'll be fed back when you treat your home as an art project, when you not only use it as a creative base, but it is the thing that is being created and will create you right back. This will also support your sense of grounding. This is a factor that is absolutely essential to your sign, that there be a strong foundation. In this case, the foundation is it's more than a spiritual foundation. It's something about recognizing the beauty of existence in its current physical form, where light comes into the space and it's easy to observe changes, and where there is an ongoing living relationship that surrounds your environment. And so another way of saying this is that your environment needs to be the right environment to create. Now, you know, art has been created under all kinds of circumstances, from the Lascaux cave to concentration camps to squats in Paris to, you know, anywhere. And people will assemble aluminum cans into art, and toilet bowls, and popsicle sticks and everything. But in your ideal life, there is a strong sense of grounding, of value, and a sense of space and of place. And clearly with Leo, that needs to be the clean, well-lighted place. And so as you are grounding your creative process and grounding your talent, I suggest strongly that you clear out space. And, you know, I know that having some strong Taurus in my chart, there is a love of one stuff, and you can almost joke about, well, Debbie Kempton Smith does, about how Tauruses love their stuff. I mean, who doesn't? But Tauruses really love their stuff. And still, it's necessary to make space. And so if you have to trade some stuff for some space, definitely do that. Convert some of it to money or pass it on to people that are going to appreciate it in some way or set it aside. But make space. Clear open space. And give yourself room to work and get the full value of your space. Now, with Jupiter coming through your fourth house, there is a hint there that now would be a good time to expand your space and to expand your horizons and to give yourself better, more appropriate room, and to make the investment, if you need to make the investment, in a better space to live and to work. You could easily live and work in an art studio. It's a very nice, cushy, bright, clean, well-lighted art studio, but nonetheless, that would serve you very well to really wake up and to be surrounded by what you do. Now, not everyone can live like that. Not everyone likes to live like that, but I will say that if you are looking for ways to fully stoke and invest in your creativity, that's a really, really good way to do it. And the theme of beauty, by the way, I'm going to skip a house and come back to the fifth house in a second, because the fifth is a very, very important house in this process, especially for you. But your work environment, described by the sixth house, has Libra on that cusp, and that is saying that whatever you are doing, whatever that work happens to be, no matter where it is, whether it's the money gig or whether it's the most creative aspect of your work, that work environment needs to be beautiful. Get rid of the drop ceiling, or work your way into the best office in the place, or wash the windows, or fill the room up with plants. But there has to be an element of beauty that surrounds you. This is something that is true for you down to the level of your soul. There is no avoiding this for you. Okay, let's consider the fifth house, which is the house of creativity. It is the house of risk-taking that is necessary in creativity, and it is the house where, well, it's the art studio in the chart. And you have Virgo on this house. And this is it's another mutable sign, and it is also the sign that is associated with mental activity. And it's one of the whole mutable cross connection to Taurus, for example, Gemini and Virgo, are one of the reasons why it is very challenging for people with strong Taurus to get out of their head and into physical reality. And this is one reason why the yoga path of making your whole life your art project is a viable path, because it's all about the constant creation of, not the thinking about the creation of. Now, Virgo on the fifth is the thinking about creating something thing. And the more steps you can cut out of that, the better. The closer that you can get to taking action as a means of thought, immediately start sketching or immediately start the model, rather than contemplating it, get the idea down on paper. You would be amazed how far that will get you. There's one other thing coming through the fifth house, which is there is a simultaneous need for keeping a broad vision but focusing on specific projects. And I would say that the older you are, the more specific you need to be about what you want to create, at least one project at a time, so that you give yourself some focus and therefore are able to actually accomplish something that is tangible, that is satisfying in at least the creative rewards that it gives. And if you're going to do this in any way professionally, then you really have to be concerned with getting the tangible result. And that's often about specifically focusing. And in our multitasking lives, this can be the kind of thing that you really have to stop and remind yourself of on a nearly continuous basis, that you know, there's a lot to do, and shopping and laundry and cooking and taking care of kids and animals and all of the above. And then ultimately you have to stop and you have to focus, and that focus is going to require what may feel like over-focus and perhaps some neglect of other things at times. Now, this is a, you know, the to have Virgo on the 5th means that you have an extremely creative intellect. And I would suggest that you cultivate and develop that, and you feed that with reading, that you feed that with theory. There are two signs that really, really love theory. One is Aquarius, one is Virgo. They are both prominent in your chart. We'll come to Aquarius right at the very end of the discussion. And you need ideas behind what you do. And similarly, you need to not get lost in those ideas. The beauty of working with ideas is you get to change them to do your original thing, to make your original contribution. And so on a number of different accounts, the reading and writing process are as important as anything. Even if you're a potter, knowing the, for example, the chemistry behind the pottery is crucial. And say, for example, keeping a diary of what you do in your pottery studio so that you have a record. Virgo likes to have a record. Virgo is the sign of the laboratory notebook. And so in addition to reading the laboratory notebooks and creative philosophy of others, I suggest that one of your creative devotions be a lab notebook, that be a work of beauty, an elegant, gorgeous record of what you do and what you think and what you are creating as you do it. Alrighty. So I have been working with the premise in this series that the second house is the house of self-esteem. And that's a pretty good premise. It tends to work well in counseling astrology, and it has a good foundation in classical or traditional astrology. But I have another theory with Taurus, which is that the ninth house is going to contain a very strong focus and quest for self-esteem. And here's why. The ninth house is the house of one's spiritual belief system. This comes out of classical astrology, where the institution of the church was included in the ninth house, as were all things of an exotic, imported, distant, or, you know, basically from far away nature. And in modern psychological astrology, the ninth house becomes the house of all of those things, all things foreign, certainly, but also one's relationship to one's higher power. I'm using those words somewhat generically. I know this means something different for everyone, and I want to make sure I do my best to keep that in your belief system. Sometimes one person will say God, and another person will say their higher power, and they mean the exact same thing. Sometimes one person will say God, and another person will say their higher power, and they don't mean the same thing, if you know what I mean. So in your case, let's think of it as the kind of least common denominator of personal spiritual contact to the larger universe and the inner light within. That's often found in the ninth house. And what's interesting is that on the ninth house cusp, you have Capricorn. And Capricorn can make that challenging because there's so much structure to go through in Capricorn. There is so much following us from the past in Capricorn. There is so much family tradition in Capricorn. And the way I think this works is that with Capricorn on the ninth house is, you know how you think, well, the church, you know, what is with these people? And you look at the church and you look at the history of what they've done, whether it is the burning times or various other types of crusades or what they've done to kids all throughout their history, apparently going back to the 4th century. And then you realize that sometimes for some people, there is actually something true that comes through, even despite all of that baggage and all those filters and all that history. You know, the spiritual contact that someone makes with themselves or with their higher power, sitting in the back of a cathedral and meditating, happens irrespective of what the church did throughout its history. And your relationship to your spiritual connection point is very similar to this, in that whatever traditions have been inflicted on you, whatever you know, family history there is, whatever religious history there is, you still manage to find through that the living part of the tradition. So you could say the tradition is composed of sort of its residue, but then there's the living part, and that's what you specialize in focusing on. And I think you know that the institution of the church and the building of the church and all that, that's sort of like, all right, that's there and that's what happened. But then there's the reality. And what I have seen in such interesting ways is that no matter how much of the tradition you might be into, still, that does not obscure the living part of the tradition. And that, I believe, is the essence of self-esteem for Taurus. Now, the beautiful thing about the astrology now is that Pluto is going through this house. Talked about this in previous readings. It's a central focus and feature of your current charts right now to have Pluto making its way through Capricorn. And what that transit is about is clearing out the dead parts of the tradition in order to make room for the living parts of the tradition and making an ever wider conduit. There's also reevaluation going on. There is the possibility of, in an even more prominent way, becoming a kind of a tradition unto yourself. I would say that maybe being a minister is pushing it a little bit, but then, you know, anyone who does the Course in Miracles gets to that lesson that day, not sure when it is, basically that says, I am among the ministers of God. And then you realize, well, this is not really a big deal. If God is real, then every person through whom God manifests is going to be one of his emissaries. And so here is a way to think of your creative process. Here is a way to orient yourself on what you might think of as the deeper or the deepest purpose for what you are doing, which is to serve in the creative process as a conduit for this living tradition that is coming through you. And there is great power for you in connecting with traditions, in understanding traditions, making sure that you're not bound by them, making sure that they don't rule you, that you are able to make your own decisions. But using tradition as a kind of a foundation is something that will prove to be extremely empowering. And as with Virgo on the fifth house, understanding the history of what you're doing is crucial, whatever that history might be, whether it's painting, acting, astrology, music, understanding and drawing power from. Capricorn in many ways is like a battery of stored power from history. And tapping into that and drawing power out of the accumulated knowledge base that has been left to you, that has been given to you as a direct inheritance. Okay, let's cover the 10th house. The 10th house is the house of achievement. The 10th house is where you establish your reputation. The 10th house is the, well, in mundane astrology, it's the house I call the one that goes all the way to the top. It's the house that is associated with leadership, and in most people's minds, that is a form of executive leadership. In your chart, it shows up as collective leadership. And so there's something here about the reputation of a group and your reputation being integral to the reputation of a group. Said another way, there is profound strength that will come to you by learning how to work with a group. You will bring out your best talents by working collaboratively and cooperatively with others. And, you know, Aquarius is some strange territory because it necessarily has to focus on a kind of exclusion. Aquarius is not the sign of populace, of everyone. That's Pisces. Aquarius is the selected group. It is the theater troupe. It is the Loyal Order of the Water Buffalo. It is the 64 F64 club of photographers. It is the people who join together consciously as individuals and work in a group or collective environment. And I so strongly suggest that you master the art of doing this and that you acquire the leadership skill of leadership within collaboration, of being someone who helps facilitate organization and plays your role very well and remains adaptable to other roles within the group, right? So one of the ways that you make astrology work for you, one of the ways that you draw on the power of astrology and that you use it to your maximum advantage, which is basically what I spend my days explaining, but I don't usually explain this one part of the theory, is that you look at the chart and you look at where the different themes match the different departments of life, the themes being the signs and the departments of life being the houses, and then you identify and overlay, in this case, Aquarius on the 10th house, and then you work that piece of the hologram. 10th house, reputation, leadership, power. Aquarius, group, collective, group of individuals, egalitarian leadership style, and then you put that together. And so particularly on the level of high achievement and reputation, you are likelier to succeed with the support of a group, if not being fully involved and invested in one. There's different degrees of involvement, and depending on how independent you are, you might not want to be so directly involved, but rather have the support of one, or you might want to be fully involved, and you may go through phases of your life where you are at some time more involved, and sometimes you're operating as an independent person. But certainly the group aspect is a crucial initiation. It's something to always bear in mind, and it is also, let's say, it is a foundational level of skill that you can acquire. And by the way, the group theme carries over into the 11th house, which is Pisces, where there is a kind of a very wide space of presentation. I would say that if your work is destined to reach anyone, it's destined to reach a lot of people, and that you aim to make at least some part of what you do fully accessible to everyone. That there, while there may be an elite group involved in the creation of it, and by elite I just mean selective or self-selective, that in the presentation is designed to reach the largest possible segment of society. That is described by Pisces on the 11th house. And what is very exciting about Pisces right now is that this is with three really wonderful planets there, Neptune, Chiron, and Borysici in your 11th house in Pisces. There is a lot of energy there. There's a lot of inspiration. And so the further out you go with your work, the more inspiration you're likely to draw from your work and from the people who are involved with experiencing what you're doing, and get a really strong symbiosis going. And this is sort of like, you know, think of the 10th house in Aquarius as being the musical group, right, the band. But the 11th house starts to expand into the groupies and the crowd and the vendors and all that. There's a lot of power, a lot of creativity, Pisces, fertile ground, water in the well, healing strength, focus, teachers who will come in. So your chart describes a kind of an ever-widening perspective as you move through the houses. It starts fairly focused, and then with Gemini, it becomes more diverse, and then with Cancer on the third, it becomes more open, and this openness just extends and moves around the wheel as your chart develops, as you move through the houses, culminating in the 12th house, Aries, a deeply private individual, no matter how public you might be, no matter how well known or what you may reveal to others, ultimately, in the end, your life is the story of the me nobody knows. A wonderful play, by the way, a really fantastic play. All right, I'll leave you with that. Please save your questions for the Q&A session associated with Good as Gold. Thanks for signing up for this. Really appreciate it. I love doing these readings, and I love that they are becoming something of a phenomenon at Planet Waves. It's an awesome way to communicate, and then adding the group sessions really makes it co-communication. Because what I'm doing right now is speaking to you, but it's one way, and then I wanted to add that feedback loop for a while, and now we've got it. So look for your email scheduling that. It's going to probably be the third or fourth week of August, because I'm traveling for a few days in mid-August, so it'll probably be, you know, sometime after the 18th, and I look forward to speaking with you. All right, a pleasure as always, and thanks to all the amazing Taurians in my life who make my world such an amazing place. Okay, bless, and bye for now.